Muammar Gaddafi silences the rebellion in his capital, if nowhere else. The crisis in Libya may leave behind a longer-term security threat. As the EPA sizes up the risks of drilling for natural gas, politics may be trumping science. And insurgents in Colombia who once got their income from cocaine are switching to gold mining. I'm Pat Lyons with a preview of Friday's New York Times. A state of terror has seized neighborhoods of Tripoli, the Libyan capital, where a week ago there were raucous protests against the dictatorship of Colonel Muammar al-Gaddafi. An eerie quiet has fallen over the capital, and residents tell David Kirkpatrick of The Times that Colonel Gaddafi's secret police and militiamen are using photos and video images taken during the protests last week to track down, arrest, and torture or kill people who took part in them. Though his forces appear to be in complete control in the capital, elsewhere in Libya, the rebels have been gaining ground after successfully fighting off an assault on Brega, an oil port in the east. In Washington, President Obama issued his bluntest statement yet on Libya. He said that Colonel Gaddafi had to go and that he had instructed the Pentagon to be ready for a range of military options, including the possibility of imposing a no-flight zone on the country. Whether the rebellion in Libya succeeds or fails, the chaos in the country has already opened a Pandora's box that has Western security officials worried. Armories have been looted in parts of the country where the government has lost control, and Chris Chivers writes in The Times that civilians have gotten their hands on some dangerous equipment, including rocket-propelled grenades, machine guns, and especially SA-7 shoulder-fired heat-seeking missiles. These things are in the same family as American-made Stingers. They're lightweight, durable, easy to use, and well able to bring down a large aircraft in flight. Military jets have countermeasures to help protect them from SA-7s, but most civilian jetliners do not, and security officials around the world are worried that terrorists could use the missiles to wreak havoc. In the past, when armories have been looted by civilians, whether in Uganda in 1979, Albania in 1997, or Iraq in 2003, the looted weapons have quickly turned up on the black market and moved to other countries and other conflicts. Once they're out of state control, a researcher who studies weapons proliferation tells The Times, they are almost impossible to round back up again. Ian Urbina reports that the controversy over a method of drilling for natural gas has shed light on a long-time pattern of politics trumping science at the Environmental Protection Agency. Mr. Urbina's article is the third in a series on hydrofracking, a method of getting more natural gas out of the ground by pumping water and chemicals into the ground. He reports that pressure from industry lobbyists and from Congress have resulted in the EPA pulling its punches repeatedly on environmental problems caused by hydrofracking, often overruling the advice of its own scientists. For example, the agency dropped plans to study the radioactivity of wastewater used in hydrofracking, despite evidence that it was a serious threat to water supplies. And a staff recommendation to impose a moratorium on hydrofracking in the New York City watershed was deleted from the agency's letter to New York State on the issue. Mr. Urbina writes that the agency's lawyers are deeply divided over whether the EPA is doing enough to stop what some say are clear violations of federal law by gas drillers in New York and Pennsylvania. Rebel groups in Colombia that used to finance themselves mainly with cocaine production have been moving into unauthorized gold mining instead. Simon Romero reports in The Times that with gold prices well above $1,400 an ounce, the highest on record if you don't count for inflation, Colombia is experiencing a frantic gold rush, part of a broader mining boom in South America. With so much American pressure to wipe out coca fields and block the flow of cocaine to market, the rebels are finding it easier and more lucrative to dig gold instead. But Mr. Romero reports that the rebels use crude methods that devastate the landscape, foul the water, and cause some of the worst mercury pollution anywhere in the world. On top of that, the mining areas are plagued with deadly violence as rival groups struggle over control of gold riches, just as they did over cocaine. When it comes to regulating American banking and finance, Democrats and Republicans don't agree on much. But they do agree that the two big troubled government-sponsored housing finance agencies, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, ought to be dismantled. Benjamin Applebaum of The Times looks at the major changes that that would bring for homebuyers across the country. For one thing, he says, 15- and 30-year fixed-rate loans would probably disappear. Nearly all new mortgages would have adjustable rates, which are much riskier for the borrower and much safer for the lender than fixed-rate loans without a government-sponsored guarantee. Interest rates would probably rise by a quarter to a half point at least. Minimum down payments would rise. and banks would probably charge much higher fees for rate lock-ins and other services. All in all, Mr. Applebaum reports, eliminating the mortgage agencies would probably make it much more expensive and much riskier for many American families to buy a home. And finally, Kim Severson writes for The Times about the great North Carolina truffle war, fought by two antagonists who could hardly be more different. In Ms. Severson's account, we meet Franklin Garland, who lives at the end of a rutted dirt road with his wife, 20 canaries, and a mermaid statue in a house he built himself. And there's Susan Rice Alexander, who lives in a 10,000-square-foot mansion by the fifth hole of a golf course with her surgeon husband. The two of them have been battling and suing one another for years over business plans and trade secrets in one of the chanciest kinds of agriculture there is, trying to cultivate black Perigord truffles. The coveted funguses that grow on certain tree roots, sometimes, when they feel like it, and the conditions are just right, can fetch $600 an ounce wholesale, and an acre of trees might yield $45,000 worth a year if you could get them to grow reliably. Mr. Garland says he's developed a way to do it on a large scale by inoculating saplings, and that Ms. Alexander backed out of a deal to buy a large lot of them. She says they never had a contract, and she wants her deposit back. While they fight it out in court, neither one of them is digging up very many truffles, and local foodies are skeptical that they will anytime soon. And that's a preview of Friday's New York Times. For more on these and other stories, pick up a copy of the paper or visit nytimes.com. From the New York Times newsroom, I'm Pat Lyons.